Real families, real farms, real food. Welcome to Arizona Agriculture Connection with Maricopa County Farm Bureau. My name is Nicole Clements, Executive Director, and I'll be your host. Maricopa County Farm Bureau is the voice of agriculture in a community that thrives on the dichotomy of urban and rural agriculture operations. This podcast is a home for farmers, ranchers, food lovers, prospective agriculturalists, and those looking to connect the food on their plate with the farm that it came from. As we take an inside look at agriculture in Arizona, we will delve into topics like ag technology, policy, food preparation, and everything in between. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform with new episodes every Wednesday. Arizona Agriculture Connection is hosted by Maricopa County Farm Bureau and sponsored by Paloma Ready Mix and Materials, a proud supporter of agriculture and our communities. Be sure to subscribe and share your favorite episodes with your friends. For more interactions, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Maricopa County FB. Now let's discover some Arizona agriculture. Welcome back, Arizona Aggies, to another edition of Arizona Agriculture Connection. This week, I am extremely excited to have as a guest Chef Kevin Barco. Most notably, maybe, if you're in the West Valley, the chef from the Heritage at Old Town on Main Street in Buckeye. So welcome, Chef. Thanks for being here.
Yes, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of you may be wondering, why do you have a chef on a show about farming? But the maybe bigger question is, why wouldn't we have a chef on our show about agriculture? You guys take what our farmers and ranchers spend their life dedicated to producing and turning it into something absolutely delicious. I have not had anything at your restaurants that's not 10 out of 10. So can you just give us a little bit about your story, your background? Where did you grow up and kind of what led you to Buckeye?
Well, I was born and raised in Metro Detroit area in Michigan, a little small town south of Detroit. And I was kind of the agriculture nerd in the big city of Detroit. I joined 4-H. It was a very small little 4-H group. I was always attracted to livestock and always loved to be around horses. So I joined the 4-H without a horse and then ended up getting a horse later on in high school. And I grew up with a little bit of that influence. And all of my friends and most of my family thought I was kind of crazy for owning a horse in the city. I have a couple pictures of me on my horse walking down a busy street, and it was kind of weird. But always had that in my blood, it seemed like. And then later on, I grew up in a family that was a third and fourth generation steel workers in Detroit. And I was kind of expected to go away to college or join the military. And when I was finished, come back to the steel plant and work at the steel plant. And I ended up going to college and took a part-time job in a restaurant. And that restaurant really was a family-owned fine dining chop house, and it really changed the course of my life to hospitality. And so I did not come back to the steel plant. I started my career really in college in the restaurant business. And from there, it just continued to grow, and I've worked in many restaurants. I happen to have some great teachers along the way, both in culinary and in hospitality in the front of the house. And it has been just a phenomenal journey after leaving high school in 1978. So now you know how old I am. But I've spent all those years since 1978 really in the restaurant hospitality business.
It's such a difficult business to be in, which again kind of aligns, you know, with our agriculture. It takes resilience and guts to kind of dive in and do that. What was your biggest motivation for being in the restaurant industry?
It was the people. You know, people talk about having a superpower. I love connecting with people, and my superpower is really being out front. At an early age, when we had a very tight family in Detroit, aunts and uncles, grandpa, grandma, we all got together on those special occasions and had dinner. And for me, I loved fixing dinner. Whatever little part I could play as a young adult or a young teenager, I would make pies or I would make the bread. And then I graduated to spaghetti. So people started to say, oh, we're going to have Kevin's spaghetti. And I didn't necessarily, although I enjoyed cooking, the real joy was just serving others. And back then, it was just family. I loved getting everyone together, everyone around the table, and I just had a lot of fun with being with others. And that just continued to grow as a profession. My mom, later on in high school, worked part-time outside the home, and she wrote a big note that was permanently affixed to the counter that said, Kevin, no cooking until I get home. Because I would sometimes do a lot of cooking and experimenting, but not so much on the cleaning end. So she would come home sometimes to a messy kitchen and she didn't like that. So I have that note to this day that she saved for me. So kind of interesting.
So I'm gonna make maybe a pun type joke here. So you were highly involved in 4-H, and as we all know, the motto for 4-H is doing the best better, right? And I think when you kind of look at this circle of life between agriculture and chefs, that's essentially what you're doing every day, which I think is just maybe a full circle moment for you. But you're taking whatever farmers and ranchers are producing that is the best, and you're making it better. And I can't think of a more beautiful picture to kick it off.
Honestly, my relationship with the farmer and the rancher has really come into focus since the restaurant. They come into my restaurant and I've gotten to know them personally. And what I have found out is really quite interesting. It was very obvious to me, but just never really gave it much thought, is we're really very similar in what we do. We work really hard. The restaurant business, like you mentioned, is really a hard business. It's a lot of work. It's long hours. It's sometimes you work when other people aren't working, and it's sometimes profitable and a lot of times not so profitable. You're working on very skinny margins. So we have a lot in common with farmers, with chefs, for sure.
And I think knowing that, understanding, that kind of relationship that comes between the two, they're built on community, right? Everybody wants a local spot where they can go and hang out. And, just being in your establishment there in Buckeye, I see it every time I'm in there. People are gathered around the tables, having conversations, catching up, having meetings, whatever it may be. That sense of community is very strong. And kind of with that, you're also extremely involved in not only your Buckeye community, but your Arizona community and giving back, you and your wife. So can you kind of expand on some of those initiatives like CCAP and the Meals of Joy program, and kind of what do those mean to you?
Well, the CCAP program, I was a volunteer for about 8, 9 years. CCAP is Careers Through the Culinary Arts. And that program is a nonprofit that started about 35 years ago. We celebrated our 35th anniversary last year. Arizona has been involved in the program for over 30 years, and it helps high school students learn about and earn scholarships through that process to hospitality and culinary schools. And these high school students sign up and they compete cooking co competition through the school year. Right now, they're getting ready for their first competition, and there'll be about 150 competitors throughout Arizona competing for scholarships, whether it be a local community college or all the way to the biggest culinary schools across the country, including some of our own great schools here in Arizona, Northern Arizona University, our community colleges here in town, Estrella, Scottsdale Community College, when we give those scholarships to students as they earn them. So That CCAP program is really fun and exciting. It also brings the young folks into the business that we need in Arizona, the hospitality business. So it's really important. And a lot of fun working with young students. It keeps us on our toes.
Yes, I can imagine. I was at your last fundraiser event and seeing those kids. I think that was one of the best parts was when, we were voting for our fan favorite and you get to taste everything that they've put together, which by the way, I was blown away that it was high school kids that were preparing these dishes because they were beyond excellent. But then when you can go around and, drop your token in and vote for your favorite, their faces lighting up, knowing that, they've done a good job and somebody had chosen theirs as their favorite dish. Like, just that kind of rewarding atmosphere, for anyone to be a part of is just, it's something magical almost. And I think, we find that a lot within our own programs like 4-H and FFA and, being able to give back to the youth who are the future of our industry. It's the same thing. And that was such a great experience.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the Harvest Moon is basically a fundraiser that we do, but it really is an opportunity for us to show off our students. So we're really super excited about that, and thanks for coming.
Yeah, and show off they did. I tell you, if you get a chance to grab tickets to that event next year, I would highly recommend it because the food was so good.
Awesome. Awesome. The other program that we really are proud of also is a program that was prevalent here, especially on the west side here throughout Sun City, Surprise, and Buckeye. It was a program called Meals of Joy that ended up, they closed their doors in July, and we were in the right place at the right time to help them continue those meals on a program out of our restaurant called Meals That Matter. And so we're just getting set up for that same nonprofit to help the elderly with meals. And we've been doing it since July so that the elderly had a spot to order meals. We prepare them fresh and we deliver them every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to their door, to their homes. So we're really proud of that program as well.
It's such a great way to serve a community that needs you, and be able to use your skills to the betterment of the days of some of those people. Never know what a meal will bring, what kind of joy that can bring to somebody. And it's such a great, is there a way for people to support your program if they wish?
Yes, as I mentioned, we're just now getting set up for the nonprofit, and you can go to our website, The Heritage at Old Town, and I'm sure we'll have a listing on that here attached to this. But on our main website, you can go to the Meals That Matter tab and certainly get involved in volunteering or contributing. That would be great. And it really kind of goes along with our basic philosophy that we are so blessed and we have so much that we need to give it back. And that's what we're trying to do.
Wonderful, and right in time for the holiday season.
Yep, there you go.
So, if you guys are looking for a place to volunteer or see how you can help communities, we will have all of the links for Chef Barco's website and more listed on the blog page on our website for this episode. And let's kind of switch gears back into the restaurant for a minute. So, when we think about going to a restaurant, sitting down and enjoying this delicious meal, we don't really think about where our food comes from most of the time because we're too excited thinking about enjoying the meal. But how easy or difficult is it for restaurateurs to source supplies locally?
Well, it just depends on how much or how important it is to the restaurateur and to their customers or guests, because there's not a main stream of, I should say, distribution of the local product. We can't pick up the phone and order local products and have them delivered the next day like we can other products, right? So that in itself, the distribution part of it is really one of the first hurdles. The restaurant is such a busy place, and it is hard to find the time to go source it. That being said, here in Buckeye, we do have a couple sources to go to and get local products, and we do when we can. The other part of the equation is there is a price difference when we're talking about quality of product. Now, I don't care if it's local or if it's not so local. If you're going to find the best products, they're going to cost more. And a locally grown product takes more time, more effort, more care, and it's going to cost more. And sometimes the consumer is ready to pay that, and sometimes they're not. It's a balancing act, but the trend for the customers I talk to is more and more day by day, month by month, people really truly want to know where their food is coming from. And more so, they want to know where their protein, where their produce is coming from. So I'm very proud to offer the best that we can and that our customers still support it. So we're very fortunate.
So, do you think that having some of those local relationships with farmers and ranchers that are, producing some of those supplies that you need is something that maybe more restaurant owners or chefs should maybe focus on?
Yes, and I think one of the reasons why truly they don't is because I think they find that they're in a time crunch. Labor is tough to find. Consistent labor is hard to find. Again, the restaurant hospitality business is a very tough business, and when things are hectic, it's tough to find the time to source it. So I think for many chefs, that's the issue, is just getting the time to get the product physically into the restaurant.
Yeah, that makes sense because I can only imagine that, owning a restaurant is wearing about 10 different hats on any given hour.
Yeah, we have been talking to Blue Sky Organic here locally, and we truly just started actually talking with them and trying to figure out what products we can use. And they're actually able to give us, after we work with them, they'll be able to give us a list of what we can purchase and what is available. And it would be all ready for us, and we just go pick it up. And that would save a lot of time also. With that being said, I think, you look at famous chefs and famous restaurants across the world, many chefs have the ability to go to market once or twice a week and pick out their produce, or once every day pick out their produce and some of their proteins. And that is really a great, if it's close by, that's a great advantage. And we're seeing more markets come up, more farm markets that we're able to access, and that's very helpful as well.
I think something else that maybe we don't think a lot about as consumers is that, say you're selling brisket sandwiches and you need 10 briskets for the week. To a cattle rancher, that's 10 animals. And so when you have those smaller producers, they're not always able to fill restaurant orders to the capacity that you need them at. So at that point, you have to find a source that can meet the needs of, your menu and your operation and what you're doing. So when you can hit a place like a market or something that has, multiple sellers there, that's probably definitely more of an ideal situation.
Yeah, for sure.
So kind of on top of that, but I would say maybe your experience is a little bit different than most because of your affinity for 4-H and other agriculture programs. And here's my exposure to most chefs, right? Is I watch a lot of cooking shows on TV. And you get a little bit of the background story of each competitor, right? And it's not often that we see people from a rural agricultural background that are chefing at that level, right? So for you, I think, you probably have a pretty good grasp of agriculture education and what goes into it just because of your experience. But do you think that that is a universal experience for chefs, or do you think that there's room for more agriculture education within the industry?
I think there definitely is. We just in the CCAP program itself, we do about two to four, depending on the availability, farm tours with the students. And the students are coming from, Scottsdale, Phoenix, Prescott, all over the state. And some of them really have no idea about where their food comes from at all. So at an early standpoint, we feel pretty strongly about exposing them to farms and where our food comes from. So, yes, I think there's a lot of room for further education, especially earlier on, for sure.
And I know that, like, our membership and, Maricopa County Farm Bureau is more than happy to provide that or, any way, shape, or form. It's always kind of one of those things. You can always ask a farmer, they're always going to say yes, right? You want to come out and learn about what they're doing and all that kind of stuff. Farmers are an open book. Is there maybe an easier way that we could get chefs and farmers connected?
I think it is through outreach from your organization, from the 4-H's of the world, and from our suppliers reaching out and talking about, what they do. I think we hear a lot about the big factory food producers and some negative connotations about all of that. And I think we have a need to know where our food is coming from. And I think as much as we can do here in Arizona to show people where it does come from and what we do well in Arizona would be a great help for sure.
Well, let it be known right here that if you have questions about ag or where your food comes from or anything else, reach out to us at Farm Bureau. You can send us an email, you can send us a message on any of our social media sites. We're more than happy to answer your questions or be that resource or get you connected with, who can help you out with what you're looking for. And maybe this is a new initiative for Farm Bureau as we can, help connect those chefs with the farms and kind of bridge that gap.
By you reaching out to me, I mean, you came to Harvest Moon. There's going to be other events that you're going to get invited to from me. So from a chef standpoint, I think our chefs should be, inviting, folks like you to their events and you to your events and trainings or whatever you guys are up to. And that's where it starts. And I think everyone has their own little passion or their specialty, but I think if we just share, those folks will be attracted to parts of what we all do.
I think that's so true. And you think about, farmers are open books. I think chefs are the same way, but you don't always make that connection. And so, if I'm a farmer and I'm looking to make a connection with a restaurateur or somebody in the industry, should I just walk in and say, "Hi, I'm Farmer Joe, and I'd love to talk with you about where your food comes from?" Or what would be the best way to go about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think a simple introduction. We had a farmer that I talked to on a weekly basis, and I just asked him if I could somehow, some way, jump on the tractor when they're cutting alfalfa. I would love, because you see that alfalfa cutter cutting alfalfa and is going about 40 miles an hour down the row. And it's like, that must be just a blast. So anyway, it looks like a lot of fun. So I signed up, and I guess they're going to hook me up with a tractor to go out and cut alfalfa.
Maybe a new career path, you never know.
Might be. It might be. Although he told me there's not a lot of money in it. I said, okay, that's right up my alley.
You're used to that. Yeah. Well, kind of diving into career paths. So we've been doing a careers in ag series here on the podcast that we started. While this doesn't maybe necessarily fall directly into that, I did want to kind of lean on some of your experience and just say, or ask rather, what has been maybe your biggest mistake, and what did you learn from it?
And I saw that question when you sent it to me, And I struggled with it at first, but then it was so obvious to me that I struggled with it. But it was work-life balance. Early on, I did not have a grasp of that balance that you should have. You should have more of a life outside of work. And I grew up and then continued in the business, and I worked more than I lived, and I should have spent more time with the family and less time slaving in a restaurant. I talked to my wife about it. It's not really a regret. It's just we try to talk to the high school kids, especially, and some of the college kids about that balance and how important it is, especially in this business, in the hospitality business. It can kind of take over, and you're not going to have a good all-around attitude if you're always working. So the younger kids today understand that, I think, better than I did, and it's a little easier to talk to them about it because it's more important to them than it was back when I was going through it.
Yeah, I feel that too quite a bit, and that's something that I think in the moment you don't always think about it. It's just one extra night or one extra week or a weekend or, whatever it is. But now that I'm kind of growing in my career, and when you do take those moments to pause and step back and kind of enjoy your family and enjoy, your home and everything that's going on around you, you really want to make sure that you do make it a priority to have those moments, even when you're at your busiest, because it can be the refresh that you need, during a busy time.
Yeah, for sure.
Solid advice, solid advice. So next, I want to kind of dive into, or maybe backtrack a little bit into the agriculture education. You talked about jumping in a tractor and cutting some hay, and maybe we've got a new career path here, but what would be one area of agriculture that you want to learn more about?
When we started our business, right away we had opportunities to do catering and food events with some farmers here locally. And when I started my career in hospitality, I did have an opportunity to spend a considerable amount of time with cattle and raising beef. So I was pretty well educated on beef and where it comes from and what makes it good. But not so much on the produce, poultry, other areas. So if I had to pick an area that I'd like to learn more about, would be probably those two areas of poultry and produce. Arizona is a leader in produce, obviously in romaine and the leafy greens over in Yuma for half the year or a portion of the year. And I guess that would be an area that I would like to learn more about.
Yes, as someone who's only really familiar with livestock agriculture, I've learned so much about produce since being in Arizona, and just truly remarkable what they can do in a season. So, what is maybe one product as a chef that you haven't been able to get your hands on, but you would like to?
Well, I really haven't struggled with that. Because of the internet and how you can really research and search for products online that you can't find. For example, what comes to mind more recently is getting edible flowers and some of those microgreens. The flowers, we were certain times of the year, they're hard to find. The internet was one way that we were able to find not necessarily local, but small suppliers that do a beautiful job with that in our off season. So that has been that specialty produce that have been the area that we were sometimes struggle with. But Blue Sky, I hope, is going to be helping us with that, and we're going to be hopefully building a relationship with them to help us with that.
I think that's a key point that maybe we kind of assume and we don't talk about a whole lot, but relationships are key. And I think, even if you're entering into this contractual relationship with a supplier or anything like that, it still pays to be A, to be a kind human being, and B, to be able to build those relationships. And I think that's kind of one of those skills that no matter what type of career you're in, is extremely beneficial. And if you're able to have those conversations and build relationships, and you just never know what door might open next and where that can take you. So I think hopefully you agree, but that can be one of the most beneficial kind of soft skills you can have.
Totally agree. Yeah. And again, when we're working with our high school students, we talk about that all the time. CCAP is a national program, and we pride ourselves in the students that really want to network and reach out and build relationships. We believe very strongly that that's a key to success. And we have students that graduate high school here in Arizona. And then once they get out and are enrolled in a school, wherever it is, our other CCAP people across the country reach out to them and are communicating about jobs all over the country, opportunities all over the country, or they might be struggling with certain classes. And we have quite a network to help the students out. And so building relationships is really a major key to success. We agree.
And I imagine it's a pretty small industry when you think about it. And, when you're building those relationships and having positive interactions with people, that goes a long way.
Sure, it sure does.
Fantastic. Well, I want to jump into a couple rapid fire round questions. Hopefully, be pretty easy for you. But what is your favorite dish on the menu at the Heritage?
Well, my favorite dish is actually comes from the restaurant partner of mine, Ashley Roberts, brought a recipe from the Deep South, and that is our sausage gravy. And that's my favorite and the favorite of a lot of people that come to our restaurant. And so I would have to say that would be one of my favorites for sure. And our hamburger would be a close second, the Heritage Burger. People rave about it, and it's probably our number two seller.
Two classics that you just can't go wrong with.
Yes.
All right, Chef, how do you take your coffee?
I take it differently throughout the day. I drink a lot of coffee. My first couple of cups, they'll tell you, is just straight up coffee. Just black coffee first thing in the morning. I love it. And we serve one of the best cups of coffee in the world from Press Coffee here in Phoenix. That's where we start my day. I'll have a couple of those, and then I start adding cream around lunchtime, and then cream and sugar for my nighttime snack.
Perfect. So, as a chef, what is your least favorite ingredient to work with?
Least favorite ingredient would probably, again, would be, some of the game. A lot of chefs enjoy working with game items, and it's just not something I enjoy. I like kind of the basics, Italian, French cuisine, and pasta, lasagna, coq au vin, French coq au vin. Some of the classics are what I'm most comfortable with.
And so I was going to ask what your favorite is, but you listed off a few of them there. Well, as we're kind of getting into the holiday season, right? We're all thinking about what am I going to prepare for my family? What is it going to look like? How many people are we getting around this table? Are there going to be any fist fights over the dinner rolls? So, thinking about this Thanksgiving mentality that we're working on now that we're past Halloween here. What would be your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
My favorite Thanksgiving dish is really the dressing, the stuffing, and the gravy or sauce. So, those two things together, I look forward to on my favorite holiday, Thanksgiving.
When you say dressing, food is memories, and sharing a meal is some of my favorite memories that I have with my friends, with my family. And sometimes it'll be that specific dish, right? So I can think about dressing and I think about my wonderful, wonderfully crazy Aunt Patty. Hi, Aunt Patty, if you're listening. She was in charge of the dressing. Every year at Thanksgiving, it was, I think, her grandma's recipe, maybe, but it was very specific, and she was the only one that is in charge of it and can do it. And now that she maybe struggles a little bit getting the big containers in and out of the oven, she doesn't put it but in and out of the oven anymore, but she is there supervising, making sure that everything is right. So you can't say dressing without me thinking about Thanksgiving with my family and sitting around the table and enjoying that. And I think that's true for a lot of people. There's a lot of other meals too that I can think, this is what we always prepared when we had our friends over and we would stay up late playing dominoes. And I think a lot of people have that connection with food that they don't really maybe clock instantly. We only think about it at those special occasions. But I think that's one of my favorite parts about, cooking a good meal is sharing it with people and sharing it with people that you love.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
So, what would be your go-to tips or tricks when you're preparing that holiday meal and hosting a bunch of people? What would be your best suggestions?
That's very easy. And I think if you really think about it, we teach classes on this. And whenever we talk about the big meal or holiday meal, especially something like Thanksgiving, that can be pretty involved. And some people really love hosting it, as I did for many years. The most important part about those big meals is a term called mise en place. It's a French term that means everything in its place. And expand upon that, meaning that you're prepared before you start cooking. So, what utensils do you need? What ingredients do you need? Measure those ingredients. Everything is measured out and prepped before you start cooking. So for Thanksgiving, everything needs to be really started on Monday, Tuesday, and measured out, trayed up, ready to go. And of course, making sure that the turkey, whatever type of turkey you get, is thawed out and ready for the oven. All the spices are measured, everything is ready. So when you start to tackle each segment of Thanksgiving, you're not measuring as you're going. You're not trying to do both at once. So you grab the tray with everything for the stuffing, and everything is there on a tray or two, and you just assemble. And that way you can concentrate really on finalizing the recipe and making it perfect versus trying to do both, and you discover, oh, shoot, I forgot. I don't have any pepper. I have to go to the store, So, mise en place is the most important thing to learn as a good cook.
You heard it here, people. Be prepared.
Be prepared.
One of my favorite kitchen tips and tricks that I just kind of did and didn't realize that it was a thing, but having a trash bowl or a trash bucket when you're chopping and prepping and doing all of that, because you're chopping the ends off carrots and whatever, and you don't want it to pile up and get in your way or like have the trash can right behind you. So you just throw it all in the trash bowl and then you empty it when it's full.
Staying organized is, part of the mise en place part. And also, you'd be surprised at how much it really saves. And I think, someday it's coming. We're not here quite yet, but like Scottsdale Community College, we do the competition at. We take all of the scraps and we compost, right? And you'd be surprised at when you're talking about something like Thanksgiving, how much compost you will have. And we're not, picking up compost here in the neighborhood yet, but it's like Scottsdale Community has a big garden and they already have a compost program in place. So teaching the kids how much you can save in the trash bin by composting is also coming for sure.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it's that circle of recycling that we use it, as many times as we can. And our farmers do a lot of the same thing. So seeing those parallels is definitely, you don't always realize that they're there, but they are there.
Yep, for sure.
So are you a turkey for Thanksgiving, or are you an other turkey?
Oh, yeah, no, please, please. It's got to be.
I'm just not that big of a turkey fan. I hate to say it. I'm sorry. We even raised turkeys.
Is that right? Wow.
Before we moved to Arizona, we raised turkeys for the holiday season, and they were good.
Yeah. Well, so what do you have?
I love a good prime rib.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That's okay. We'll let you go on that.
You'll let me have that one. Or I've thought about, I haven't attempted a beef Wellington yet, but I'm kind of tempted to do that.
Yeah, that would be good.
Well, we'll see what I end up making for this Thanksgiving, but those are my contenders. All right. Well, Chef Barco, it was so great to have you on today. I cannot thank you enough for the information. Again, and anybody who's looking for more information on the Heritage or Chef Barco or any of his endeavors with CCAP or the Meals of Joy, you can find those linked from the blog on our website, MaricopaCountyFB.org, and you'll find all of the information that will lead you right to his door. So, Chef, thank you so much. Anything else before we sign off today?
No, that's it. Thank you so much for making the connection. And again, I think it just kind of, for me, having this dialogue today is really the result of a relationship with when you came in the restaurant. So it's really proof in the pudding, right? And I'm very proud of the relationship and I'm anxious to continue.
Same here. It's all about relationships, and I know the farmers are excited to continue supporting our local restaurants and chefs, and the same vice versa. So hopefully we'll see some more Farm Bureau and chef collaboration in the future.
Yes, we will. I guarantee you.
Perfect. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody, to this week's very exciting pre-Thanksgiving episode of Arizona Agriculture Connection, and we will catch you next week with another AgriPort update. Thank you for tuning in today, and remember, Farm Bureau has a place for you. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with your friends on socials. You can also visit our website, MaricopaCountyFB.org, for more information and to submit a topic you want to learn about. Remember to tune in every Wednesday wherever you listen to podcasts. A huge thank you to Paloma Ready Mix and Materials for supporting our agriculture producers and this podcast. Maricopa County Farm Bureau, bringing you the stories of real families, real farms, and real food. I'm Nicole Clements, signing off. Catch you next week.